Hi, I'm Tara Lynn of Geek Saga Entertainment, and welcome back to Hot D Takes. Woohoo! Finally. This podcast series covers HBO's House of the Dragon episode by episode with myself, an avid reader of all things Aeswolf, and my friend Manny, a Game of Thrones fan who is unsullied, aka has never read the books, being your stalwart hosts. So first things first, you can find me on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter at a Geek Saga.
And I'm Manny, the aforementioned unsullied co-host, and you can find me on Facebook and Instagram at MannyCMort. Thanks for joining us for this episode, which will cover House of the Dragon Season 2 premiere titled A Son for a Son.
As a reminder, expect spoilers from the episode we're covering, but less obvious, there will be very minimal book spoilers from Fire and Blood, which is, of course, the source material for House of the Dragon. We will start with an episode summary, then cover what we think are the main hot takes from the episode, and conclude with an episode-specific favorites roundup.
We also have a rating system that we will, like true Targaryens, fill in when and where we please. And that system includes rating things on a scale of 1 to 10 Targ eyebrows.
So one change to our previous layout is that we likely won't be having a special guest every single week because that's a lot of work for yours truly. But we made sure to reach out to one of our favorite unsullied Game of Thrones House of the Dragon fans, Patrick, to join us for this season premiere.
Patrick.
So Patrick, go ahead and reintroduce yourself. If you have any social media presence, I don't know if you do, but you can tell us what those are. If not, then we can just get started.
Hi, everyone. Yes, it's me, Patrick, yet again, back from I don't know where. I was here along with Tara and Manny for the first and I guess last episodes for season one, part of the first episode and then the roundup for the whole season. I still have no social media to share with you because I'm a weirdo. But yeah, I'm here. I'm unsullied. I unfortunately do know how the war ends because Joffrey did spoil the end of the war in Game of Thrones. So I know who wins, but that's all I know.
I don't remember it. So we're just gonna fly right past that.
There you go.
Well, we are super excited to have you back with us. Just one last piece of business before you dig in. Don't forget that Geek Saga Entertainment now has a Patreon with 10 tiers ranging from $1 a month to $40 a month. It offers tons of ways to support us and receive some great perks in return, including early access to these Hot D Takes podcast episodes. And also, if you're at the $5 or more a month tiers, you also get these uncut videos, which is really fun for the handful of people that might actually watch them.
They're uncut too?
Oh, they're uncut. I don't have time for that shit.
Come on now. We got jobs. Right. We got bills to pay.
I'm in trouble. Yeah.
So check it out at patreon.com/geeksaga_entertainment.
And now it's time for the long and short of it, our weekly episode summary.
Do you want war? Because that's how you get war. Okay. Let's take a step back for a moment because listen, Aemond already caused some shit at the end of season one. However, as A Son for a Son opens, it's clearly more about posturing for both the Greens and the Blacks. First, Jace is in the north so that Cregan Stark can give him a history lesson about the Night's Watch and promise to send 2,000 old dudes to fight for Rhaenyra's cause. But listen, they're northerners, so they'll of course fight way harder than those southern boys. Civil War. Shit. I wrote that and only just now realized. Anyway, okay.
We have an election coming up. You better be careful.
I have Botox, and this is as far as my eyebrow goes up, but it is raised.
Oh, God. Okay. And hey, Daemon is also marching around trying to recruit Rhaenys and Maelys, that is, to help him take out that hoary old bitch Vhagar and her rider, of course. But Rhaenys refuses and has some sweet burns for him to boot. If only this turned Daemon off from his revenge plots. Corlys even makes a brief appearance, looking as bad, if not worse, than Rhaenyra does on her Storm's End vigil for any sign of Luke. Corlys, however, is a bit more eager than our queen appears to be when it comes to rejoining the fight. He wants his ship fixed like yesterday, but Alvin of Hull can't really promise anything because that ship is still in a pretty bad shape. Not as bad shape as Luke is in, though. Probably. On the beaches near Storm's End are his dragon's wing and Luke's cloak. Oof.
Meanwhile, in King's Landing, they've erected some scorpions because apparently they're actually historically the best way to knock out a dragon out of the sky. And Game of Thrones only made them a big deal because everyone kind of forgot about them while there were no dragons. Side note, do they have like dragon specialists or something who know the difference between all the dragons from so far away? Because listen, Vhagar is one thing, and sure, the Windy Boy is easy to spot, but wouldn't it be hard to tell many of the others apart from that distance?
Windy Boy.
Anyway.
Windy boy.
Not
Windy
Windy Boy. See, I knew that.
I should have put the pronunciation in there. It's been a long time, y'all. It's been 2 years.
Yeah. No, I was reading this. It even said in my head, it's Windy, but I still read it wrong. Anyway, we interrupt this editorial on whether or not specially trained dragon spotters exist to bring you this breaking news. Alicent and Sir Cole of House Slaw are an item. What a lovely pair of hypocrites they make, am I right?
No surprise.
However, it's not the time to unpack all of that, because we have a small council meeting to get to. Leading up to and during it, Baby Gon is being, well, Baby Gon. He wants his oldest son at the small council meeting, despite Helena's protests. And while he later does seem to be doting on little Jaehaerys, he's also letting his kid bug the shit out of Tywin Lannister, and rolling his eyes at the idea that they should maybe hold back a bit. But when Baby Gon actually sits on the throne to hear some petitions, it almost seems like he might be trying to, seriously, I can't believe I'm saying this, be decent? Granted, good old Otto is there to remind him that the sheep they've taken. But when someone stands up to speak for the Smiths and ask that they get paid ahead of time for their work, Baby Gon actually turns his granddad, I mean his hand of the king, away with a withering look and gives the Smiths what they want. Damn it, Baby Gon. Stop not being the worst. We don't need this kind of development.
Don't worry, though. We can always count on Larys Littlefooter to fill in when we need someone to be the worst. First, he barely even hides his annoyance with Alicent being indisposed, har har har, when he tried to visit her. Then we find out he's replaced all of her staff with his own people who he might trust, but, LOL, of course, she can't. And for his final move, in this episode that is, Larys corners Baby Gon to insist that he needs to carve his own path. And really, Larys wonders, does Otto, who was Viserys' hand, belong on that path? Lessai. Back in Dragonstone, Missaria, aka the White Worm, has randomly returned, but she insists she wasn't really working for Otto and doesn't actually have any super secret intel to give Daemon, but Rhaenyra returns with Luke's cloak and calls for Aemon's head. And it seems that Missaria had something Daemon could work with, because next thing we know, he's crimes cloaking it up in King's Landing to hire blood and cheese. For real, though, Rhaenyra totally brushes off the fact that Corlys and Rhaenys have almost completed the blockade of King's Landing, and Jace's news about Lady Arryn and Cregan Stark joining the cause barely registers. But we sort of digress. While Aemon and Otto are plotting, and Baby Gon and his buddies are partying, Blood and Cheese are, well, not catching rats or killing Aemon, but kind of stumbling upon Helena and her children and deciding, hey, all Daemon really insists was on a son for a son, so let's just take one of these babies. And thus, with a point of Helena's finger, Baby Gon's son, Jaehaerys, dies.
End scene.
End scene.
All right. Hot take number one. The opening in the North, like, really just hooked me back to the Game of Thrones premiere, which I loved. I will say, though, the voiceover thing, not so much love. It did turn out that it was Cregan actually telling Jace the history of the North and the Night's Watch and the Wall, and not some sort of like, here's the text of a letter or history being read, which I was kind of worried it was at first, but I was still a little bit about that part. But I did really like just kind of the hearkening back to season one of Game, like, not even just to season one, episode one of Game of Thrones, where they open in the North and really even at the Wall. I don't know. I liked it. I'm here for it.
Yeah, it definitely brought it back to like the original Game of Thrones, which I thought was great, because it was a reminder that, hey, this is, like, for me anyway, it was a reminder of, hey, this is a spinoff of Game of Thrones, right? Because House of the Dragon is kind of, in my life, has kind of taken its own hold of me to where I just feel like it's something completely different because of how great Game of Thrones ended and everyone loved the ending to it so much. I feel like my brain has kind of like chopped it off and was just like, oh yeah, that was fine. So House of Dragon to me, even though it is a spinoff, it's just kind of been its own kind of like, you know, proprietary thing where I'm just like, oh, okay, great. But when they brought Into the Wall, it reminded me of the things that I really enjoyed, you know, about Game of Thrones. And one of them was the Wall, because I was always a big fan of the North. I was a big fan of the Starks. It was really awesome that they introduced that, because it kind of, I don't know, it brought it together for me. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, definitely. I like that we're expanding the world a little bit beyond King's Landing now. It's really cool to see the Wall again. I loved the little tidbit that we got that allegedly when the dragons first came to the Wall, they wouldn't go past it. That's kind of spooky. I think that's cool. Mm-hmm. I wonder if they could somehow sense the horrible icy death that lurked beyond the Wall.
Well, yeah, and it's interesting too, because in Game of Thrones, Daenerys' dragons seem to kind of just go.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. She did cross the Wall, so
the whole, like, back in the day we used to hand out a bag of rocks and whoever got the black rock was a son of the Starks who had to go to the Wall. It's unnecessary history in a way, but I do like that they're expanding this era's world. Yeah. Obviously we saw so much of Westeros and Essos, etc., in Game of Thrones, but we've seen, you know, like you said, Manny, like, not just King's Landing, but it's been like almost entirely King's Landing and Dragonstone with like a little bit here and there of other places, very tiny bit. So they very quickly, I mean, they literally opened this season with this kind of big expansion. And from what we've seen and heard about this season, we know they're going to go a lot farther than that. But it was still just nice to be back in the North for a hot second, even if it's not for the best reasons.
Yeah. Definitely. It really makes me miss my Starks that I know and love.
Although Cregan did sound a lot like Jon Snow for a bit there.
I was like, a little bit.
Did they cast this guy on purpose? Like, I almost feel like I'm listening to fucking Kit Harington.
Kind of what happened with the upkeep. Like, I felt like when they were there at the Wall, it just seemed a lot cleaner.
Oh, yeah.
A lot nicer. Like, no one seemed as, like, grunged out as whatever, how many times has passed, 100 years or so or whatever. And it's like, oh, everybody was really kind of like, I think they were kind of like, you know, they weren't really keeping up with it. But
yeah, they didn't have the numbers by Game of Thrones era to keep up with it. So yeah, it did look a lot cleaner, more built up, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, nice insight into that.
I didn't think about that. I guess maybe all the castles along the Wall are manned at this time period.
No, not all of them, but more of them were. And
gotcha.
Yeah, not all of them by any means, but for sure more of them. And they were all, the ones that were manned were better manned, most especially Castle Black. So
sure. Leading into our next hot take, Rhaenys is hot burn. So Rhaenys flies in. She's had a long day or week of patrolling the skies, keeping that blockade up. And Daemon thinks that he and his windy boy, along with Rhaenys and her dragon, can actually kill Vhagar? Question mark. And we get this line, while the mother grieves, the queen shirks her duties. Which, you know, is understandable, but a little rude. Rhaenys replies she's not acted on the vengeful impulse that others, wagging my Targaryen eyebrow, may have.
Your singular Targaryen. Singular.
Daemon tries to give her an order, and she's like, would that you were the king. And she walks off.
I was watching this, and I'm like typing up the notes for this episode. Rhaenys says she's not acted on the vengeful impulse that others may have, and I'm just like, burn in my notes, literally burn, all caps. And then Daemon is like, fly with me. It is a first of all, what is this, fucking the Wizard of Oz?
Yeah,
fly with me. It is a command. And she, yeah, would that you were king. Burn again. Like, damn, Rhaenys. Again, hot burns, love her.
Absolutely. And I was wondering if there was a little bit of subtext here that we were meant to pick up on, because part of the conversation was Daemon saying, we're going to kill Aemond. It's a son for a son. And there's a moment where she's talking about her son, Laenor, and how she can relate to what Rhaenyra is doing, because she kind of was going through the same thing. It's different hearing about your kid's death and not being able to, like, see it for your own eyes. I guess that could be very torturous. And, you know, eventually Daemon says something along the lines of, well, had you taken your shot, Luke would still be alive, because Rhaenys had that moment when she burst through the floor on her dragon to basically wipe out the whole royal family right there. And she just gives them this look. And I wonder if in her head she's thinking, yeah, a son for a son.
listen, like Damon has a point, obviously, but we also, you were not on that particular episode, but obviously if Rhaenys had burned them all alive, we would not have a show.
Nope. Right.
So there's like that, it is what it is sort of thing. But I also think that Rhaenys was still in that moment hoping that this isn't what Viserys would have wanted. This isn't what should be happening. So we're gonna try to not. I think she wanted to try, and then the Luke thing happened, and it's like, okay, fine. Like, you can blame Rhaenys for Luke's death. You could also blame Rhaenyra for Luke's death, I guess, in a way, because she was like, yeah, sure, okay, kid, go ahead. You can blame Luke himself for his own death, because he insisted on going out as this like young, very young kid to treat with these people at Storm's End, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't know. I was just living for her standing up to Damon, like, I'm not fucking scared of you. And like, my dragon is tired. She needs to eat a fuck ton of animals. Sheep. And sleep.
And literally, so do I.
Literally any animals, and also sleep. Fuck off, dude. Right. I like that she stood up to him. Not that I would expect anything less of Rhaenys, honestly, but she also was just real fucking on point with her responses.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I mean. I don't think she would have foreseen Luke dying the way he did, but Damon is saying, complaining about his kid dying. She's like, well, you know.
Dude, even Aemond didn't see that. He...
Right.
Listen, need we bring back surprise Pikachu face?
Yeah.
I just think she has a hard time feeling bad for the loss of his son when she still believes that he was responsible for the loss of her son.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. My thoughts on it. Okay. So it's like, while the mother grieves, the queen shirks her duties. Like, that actually pissed me off, mm-hmm. because it's like, dude, look, man, like, any good, you can go out there and you can wreak vengeance, right? But what Rhaenyra is doing here, see, this is why. With these two characters, with Rhaenyra and with Rhaes, right? It's like, look, just give her a minute. Things happen in your life where it's like, you know what? Just give me a fucking minute. That's honestly how I was able to kind of overcome some of the problematic stuff that has been kind of going on in my life, was like that, right? It's like, oh no, you need to have an absolute reaction right now. And I'm like, no. No. Just give me a second. And especially when it comes to something like that, you lose a kid. She wants to be sure. And I totally got that. And if it's like, if that would have been like my wife, I'd been like, look, just take your time, right? Because one of the things that I really liked, you know, about this was when Rhaenys was like, she didn't kill the like royal family and everything. Like, yeah, she could have done it. This is why I love her character so much, because it's like, a bull does not need horns to eat grass. Mm-hmm. The bull needs horns so nobody fucks with it while it eats grass. And I thought that the message that she had sent when she came out of the ground and looked at them with the dragon sent way more of a message, and a message that puts fear into everyone. If you'd have killed the royal family, it would have been done and no one would have been talking about it anymore. It would have just been like, okay, whatever. And obviously there would be no show and there would be no podcast. So that message that she had sent, and yeah, him coming at her like, oh, well, if you'd have done, you know, whatever the hell, it just goes to show that Damon is just, I don't know, weird. And yeah, and he was completely full of himself, where he's like, no, get back on your dragon. We're going to go. It's like, bro, you ride dragons. You should know that the dragon's hungry.
Yeah.
And then let us do it. And like with any great tactician throughout history, it's like, dude, you don't just charge into something. You don't say, okay, well, they came at us and we're going right at them. It's like, no, you have to think about, you have to calculate, you have to figure out how you can do it, because you can spend 20,000 people trying to reclaim a throne, or you can spend 5,000 people doing it.
Rhaenys really, I mean, not that she's ever like not been great, but she, in this scene, man, she fucking shone. And the writing, chef's kiss.
Absolutely.
The writing always with these people.
I can't wait to see more of her.
We say the writing always with these people, but the next hot take.
Oh man, Alice Law. All right, look, dude, this is what we're calling them. This is their name now. That's how we're shipping them. All right, dude, this is how it is. It's Alice Law, dude.
I mean, as soon as I saw Alicent getting fucking eaten out by somebody, I was like, oh, I knew it was him. I knew it was him.
Yeah, same thing. Yeah, I watched it.
Absolutely no way it was anybody else. But
no,
like,
yeah.
Also, I had this, like, even though I knew it was him right then, whoa, they fucking went there with Sir Cole of House Law and Alicent. Like, I had heard rumors that they were going to do this with the show, but I was still like, wow. What a pair of fucking hypocrites.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I loved I loved when Allison is like, we can't do this again. And all I just hear like the narrator, they would, in fact, do it again.
Right. They would, in fact, do it again.
Many times.
Many times.
But also, what a fucking pair of hypocrites.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, come on. Yeah. Do we really expect anything else from these people at this point? I mean, come on.
I'm also really torn because, listen, Allison had she got stuck with Viserys. As much as we love Viserys, our king, okay, old dude, when they first got together, and he deteriorated insanely quickly, and she was very, very young. And there's this part of me that's like, yes, get yours, but then there's this other part of me that's like, ooh, but maybe don't get yours with the guy you were pissed at your best friend for sleeping with. It's a lot of like, oh, you're a fucking hypocrite, but also I don't disagree with the fact that you deserve a little bit of pleasure in your life. Oh, yeah. I don't know. I don't love Allison, but also
that's the great part of this world, is the gray area that all these characters live in. I mean, yeah, Allison, it seems like a lot of the issues she has with Rhaenyra is that she's not, it seems like Allison gets kind of wrapped up in religiosity at some point around season one, and that feeds her, I guess, worldview. So if at first I thought, you know, maybe it's only oral, right? So that's their maybe reasoning for it. Is that makes it okay?
Oh my God, wait. Have you, I'm sorry, I'm not meaning to interrupt you, but
no, go ahead.
Manny, you know Garfunkel and Oates, right?
Oh yeah. Oh,
the
yeah.
Butt sex song.
Yeah.
So Patrick, if you've never seen this, and for any listeners, if you've never seen this, look up Garfunkel and Oates. I don't remember what the actual song is called, but it's basically like being a Christian and like sticking it in the butt is okay because it's not actually like sex or losing your virginity. It's fucking hilarious. It's
and fucking also somebody, hilarious. Somebody who was raised in that, I can tell you that that was truth that they were singing about.
But yes, no, I agree. Like I had that moment where I was like, okay, well, maybe that's all they're doing. And then... no, it's not.
Yeah, come to find out. I've thought of that episode of Family Guy where Meg, I guess, starts dating a Christian guy and, you know, they can't do full-on P&V. And so Lois walks in and she's like, you kids are doing it in the ear.
The song is called The Loophole.
Okay. The Loophole. Okay, that's what it's called. I knew it didn't have like a dirty name. Like the song itself is so...
Jeez, oh, so yeah, gosh. I thought this was just a loophole, but then at the end of the episode, you know, spoiler alert, we see the queen riding coleslaw. So
yeah,
I guess they gave up on both the loophole and we're not going to do this anymore.
The loophole always morphs into that. It always morphs into real sex. Everyone I've known, like when I grew up, they were like, oh yeah, that's, you know, whatever. It's like now they always wound up pregnant or something, or like the loophole is always, that is the gateway sex drug.
Listen, the lesson here is abstinence only is a problem.
Yep.
Abstinence only education is a problem. But yeah. Like also just what I pictured was having grown up in, when I say like grown up in an abstinence only like environment, I mean not just like what I was taught in like health class in high school, but also I was raised as a Baptist in New England, which is very weird, BT dubs. But it would have been the same if I was Catholic, which is Catholics are much more common in New England than Baptists. But we're taught that no, you do not do any of the things before marriage. So like when your friends start doing it, you're like judgy of them, like Allison was in season one of Rhaenyra. And to be fair, like I was never as judgy of my friends. I think I was more jealous, to be completely honest. But I wasn't so much judgy as I was like, oh, but they're gonna like get pregnant and like get an STD and die, like Mean Girls.
Yep.
It's very much like, oh my God, you fucking hypocrites. And also like, fuck, honestly, Allison isn't the problem here. You know who is the problem? Sir Cole of House Law. He just... oh God, because later in this episode he goes off on this tangent about how Rhaenyra is like a poisonous spider and like Allison is like so pure and good, and it's like dude,
he's the classic Westeros incel is what it is, you know. He got denied by Rhaenyra and that's like that's how he is, and now that's all he probably spends so much time talking about it, how terrible she
is. He got one taste of that Targussy and it drove him crazy.
It's exactly Look, in his defense, I mean, once you go Rhaenyra, you don't go back, right? I mean, that's it, right? That is the end.
Apparently. Goal,
I mean, I think it's more like once you go Targ, you don't go back. But also, I'm sorry, Patrick, like, I had no idea this was going to be a thing that happened in this episode. But like, you were on our very first hot tea episode and you were like, oh, Sir, well, you didn't call, we didn't even call him Sir Cole of House Law, I think, at that point, but you were like, oh, Kristen Cole, he's hot.
I had the goo goo eyes for him. Yeah.
I mean, rightfully so, but like, it's like a hilarious, like 180, like, oh no.
Oops. It's because Patrick broke up with him now, so now is like we're at the stage where you have to talk shit, you know.
I always get crushes on toxic men, so this is nothing new.
Yeah, well, there you go, you know.
I feel you.
Hey, look, I thought he was cute at first too, and I was like, great, this is awesome. But then yeah, he just is a weirdo.
He's a fucking incel. Like, all right, oh my god, okay, hot take number four. This is like a bad and a good thing. Holy shit, what an arrival and dismount for our queen. She's been watching the beaches of Storm's End, and she sees/hears, it was a little bit unclear to me, these fishermen shouting about it being a dragon wing that they're pulling in from the ocean. So like, it's really too bad that this happened, because she heard/saw these fishermen pulling in a dragon wing. But also, when Rhaenyra flew in on Syrax, that landing, like that just whew, skirts to a landing, dismounts so fast, like it was like 2 seconds long, and I was just like, oh my god, yes. And it's not just like, oh, because I love Rhaenyra, it was just a really, the CGI was good, the dragon looked amazing, the incoming like slide where the dragon like stopped before it like destroyed all the little like stands that the fishermen had set up, and Rhaenyra like just slides off like she's made for it. I hate that it was for such a bad thing that she was like going in for, but also holy shit,
there was that moment. Yeah, there was a lot of emotion in that landing. Very much a disregard for everyone else's safety, right? Like, she needed her answer. She was going to get it, and she saw it here. And I think there was a lot of emotion in it.
I mean, I don't necessarily disagree that it was like a disregard for their safety, but she also, the dragon stopped. Like, Syrax stopped short of destroying any of their little stands. The people were running away, of course, but like, that dragon, particularly like sensing how anxious and upset and mad and like everything she's feeling, that dragon could have like fucking burned everybody. It still could have burned the people running away, burned the little like stalls, whatever, but it didn't. I know, Manny, you don't have dogs. Patrick, I don't know if you're a dog person, but obviously a dragon is not a dog. This is not a one-to-one comparison. But like, as somebody who has dogs, when I've been in a situation where I've been like walking my dogs and I've been anxious or weirded out by something I am seeing or experiencing or whatever, they immediately, even if they're the nicest dogs ever, will kind of back up, and like their whole deal is, I will protect my mom, right? And I feel like she had a lot of control over Syrax in this moment, like way more control than maybe she should have had, considering her like emotions surely being all over the place. And I just thought that the whole thing was just a really good, not only did it fucking look amazing, but it was just a really good scene of like, dragon lands, stopped short of like destroying any actual physical aspects of the fisherman stalls, etc., doesn't just set off fire and burn everybody because mom is freaking the fuck out. As far as that dragon knows, if it's feeling her feelings, which you assume it would be, then you would think that it would like set off a bout of fire and just burn anything it sees, but Syrax didn't. I really thought this was just such a great, It was such a brief fucking thing, and I just really loved the way they did it in every way, shape, or form.
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, it was great. The one I saw it, there was a lot of emotion in it. It's like when you're kind of like, you're just kind of resigned into something and you're parking your car and you park your car kind of quickly and just kind of haphazardly, where you're just like, yeah, whatever. I don't care if it's not straight. I got to go do this. But yeah, just that within itself was.
But a dragon is not a car.
A dragon is not a car, guys. Okay. But no, it was awesome. And then when she goes out to the beach and all that stuff, it was emotional. It was good though.
I was a little bit confused because by the previews, like, we see there's like a pyre. So I assumed that there was a body found. Like, we see Rhaenyra doing her vigil around Storm's End. We see that there's a pyre after the fact in the trailers. But it was really interesting to me that there wasn't a body. It was just like a cloak. And all I'm saying is, if there isn't a body, there's always a chance.
There's always a chance. You're saying there's a chance. Yeah, I don't know. Because, yeah, generally, and when they do the pyre for the dead body, unless I'm mistaken, it always seemed like they get the dragon to burn it. And this just didn't seem the case. They just lit something on fire and was like, oh, hey. And they were just tossing his old stuff in there, you know? So
also, like, I do want to say, do I think that Luke is probably dead? Yes. But in Fire and Blood, it is left up to question. What interests me is that there's a lot of things in season one and even in this episode with Blood and Cheese that they clarify more than Fire and Blood did, which is why I feel a little bit like, really? Just a cloak about there not being a body. That's all I'm going to say about that.
That's an interesting point. Yeah, I mean, I think maybe she was just, who knows how many days she'd been flying around looking for a sign of her son. Maybe at this point she was just exhausted and figured, well, an entire wing off of his dragon plus his cloak. That's good enough for me. He's probably dead.
Oh, no, for sure.
At that point.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And the idea that he might be alive is like crazy, right?
Because even if the dragon didn't get him, he probably would have drowned in the sea at this point. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I may be misremembering, but I think when the moment of his death, we saw Vhagar chomp right through his body and his dragon's body. I don't know. I could be misremembering that.
They showed in the preview, like from last season, they showed the chomp of Vhagar, but like then they still didn't have any part of, like, not even an arm, as far as I could tell. Listen, I know this is a stupid. To me, it's interesting because they have confirmed or at least clarified some things from Fire and Blood in season one that were like, who set the fire at Harrenhal? We don't know. Well, guess what? We knew after season one that Larys Littlefooter didn't set the fire, but he like made sure it was set, etc. And even in the end of this episode, there's some stuff with Blood and Cheese that we'll get into in a bit. So there's that part of me that's like, ooh, they have like really like fleshed out some of these like vague things from Fire and Blood. And it's weird to me that they didn't have any part of a body. But hey, yeah, that is a good point.
Yeah. My understanding is that the book reads as like a kind of a history book. And
yes,
certain events are told from different perspectives. You never really know which part is the truth until we get to the show, which settles some questions. So it is interesting that they chose to leave this perhaps open-ended.
In terms of what happens in this episode, in the book, there's like zero proof of anything. We just know that Vhagar knocks Luke and his dragon out of the sky. Obviously, it looked a lot worse than that at the end of season one. I thought that we would have like a body or at least a portion of a body that was enough proof that he was actually gone. We did not get that. That is interesting to me. Anyway, moving on. Hot take number 5.
Okay, before we move on to hot take number 5, hold up, guys. Let's put the brakes on for a minute. Pump the brakes. Thinking back at the preview when I saw it, so when Vhagar kills Luke and his dragon, I mean, Luke is going square into his mouth.
Her mouth. Don't you dare misgender that dragon.
I'm sorry.
She is a strong, independent woman.
Exactly. Okay, I'm sorry. No, she's a hoary old bitch.
Poor old bitch. So I'm sitting here talking, and then Vhagar comes and like chomps me down, and then we guys are going to be looking for my cloak in the ocean pretty soon. It just looked like he went square in her mouth is what it looked like. The fact that there isn't a body, honestly, to me, I'm like, look, there probably isn't, because if she would have got him anywhere else, maybe. But from what it looked like and the way it came up, he just went clear down her throat, just rump. You know, like, and just swallowed him up. Yeah. There's not going to be a body.
But then why does his cloak still exist?
That, okay, so, yeah, no, and you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. The cloak wouldn't exist.
She's like, ooh, this wing is too stringy for me.
Yeah. Like,
the boy was good, but the wing, God, can't do
that
it.
That cloak, like, wraps around your uvula. Ugh. Ooh, who wants that?
My Vhagar is a little bougie bitch. Okay, that was it. Hot take number 5, guys. Okay, look, let's focus. I'll take number five. Okay, look, guys, we hate to give Baby Gone credit for anything, but let's face facts. He was not being the worst in this episode. There's a few things here, and we're not excusing his crimes or anything like that.
Yep.
Is he just trying to get the support of the people, or is that just in his nature to just be like a decent person? Look, I know. I'm just saying.
I don't think it's in his nature to be a decent person, but I also don't think that he's smart enough to play a game either.
Yeah.
I think he is a shitty fucking person who is like, God damn it. Now I'm king and I need people to like me. But also I do... Oh, God, I fucking can't believe I'm saying this, but maybe perhaps he actually was listening to these petitions and thinking, wow, this poor guy, he lost a tenth of his sheep. I should give him his sheep back.
Yep. And that's the way I saw it. And when the guy's like, oh, I need money, we just need to get paid up front to get the stuff. He's like, okay, go ahead. Yeah, absolutely.
And also like the latter, the Smiths getting paid up front. That's something where Otto like stepped forward and Baby Gone was like, no.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing that it's like, okay, whatever. Yes, we need the things. They can't afford to make us the things if we're not paying them ahead of time for the materials that they need, which also is literally the way capitalism works.
Mm-hmm. And he made a point about it. No, like if we don't get your stuff, we can't wage this war, you know? Right. So it made sense. Like, yeah, take care of the people and they'll take care of you.
So in a way, it's selfish, but
yes,
he also did seem to actually want to give that guy his sheep back. And I just like, oh, I don't want this, you guys. Like,
I don't want it either. Yeah. But it was how natural it came out of his mouth where he was just like, okay, yeah, you should get your sheep back. Why did they take away your sheep? Like, what are you talking about? Those are your sheep. So yes, that was, it was a very conflicting moment for me in that episode because, and then even when he's hanging out with his friends and his friends are talking to him, like he's just normal, like, oh no, hey man, but you're the king, dude. You can do whatever you want. It put this like weird human side to him almost. Cause when I think of like child king now, you know, when it comes to like Game of Thrones, I just think of Joffrey. So I'm like,
well, and
oh,
also
here we go.
He was a fucking terrible person in season one of House of the
Dragon. He was. Yeah, cool. Exactly. And that's where my brain was with it. He's just going to be, but you look at this and yeah, you reluctantly, you're like, you're ready to fight him on it. And you're like, oh yeah, cool. Give him.
And like, also he's still a terrible person because we still know like he absolutely assaulted women and was like dealing with the child fighting pits and shit like that. But oh my God, like I don't want him to do anything good.
When he's asking Helena.
Wow, man. Wow.
I know. and that was like an easy name too. It wasn't even one of the weird ones, but the way he was with her, he wasn't like combative or anything. He was just like, hey, where is he? And she's just, well, he's in the library. It was weird. It was almost like a tale of two.
A tale of two Aegons.
Yeah, it was a tale of two Aegons.
Yeah, in a way, I almost feel like they're trying to like walk back a lot of the really bad shit that him and his mother did in season one.
I think.
Which I'm not sure how I feel about that because I feel like it's kind of like a retcon. Oh, we got to retcon this real quick because we need you guys to feel bad about the fact that Helena's kid gets killed at the end of this episode.
I think they're really trying to build it. Let's just say that the marketing team had something to do with that. Because I think they're really trying to not paint it as black and white. They're trying to make this as gray as possible so that
I'm sorry, people... they're not trying to paint it as black and what again?
Yeah,
black they're trying and to green.
Black and green is what they're trying to like paint it as. Yes, you're absolutely right. And it certainly does seem like a tale of two Aegons. And I feel like you're right. They are retconning and they are pulling back. But I think I kind of see what they're doing here, where they're like, we want to kind of put everybody.
Oh, I totally do.
Yeah, on like an even keel to where that way we can get people on both sides. Because maybe everybody was team black and they're just like, well, no one's on team green. We got to kind of, you know, get things in their favor, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I was a little taken aback by the turn Aegon has taken between the seasons. He's a lot more chilled out now. I mean, he still is a drunk. We see that at least. But I think a lot of what was going on in that petition scene was about him and Otto, because it seems like there's kind of a recurring theme here where Aegon respects Otto as someone that has served three kings. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, he also knows that Otto played his father like a fiddle, and he doesn't want that to happen. He doesn't want to be played himself. I don't know. I liked the moment where Otto is first approaching the throne to say, hey, maybe you shouldn't do that. And Aegon just like looks past him and keeps talking to the dude, just totally ignoring Otto except to look around him. I loved that. So I'm interested to see where this goes and how Aegon, I don't know, how it all plays out. Maybe he has turned a new leaf, or maybe at some point he's going to get fed up and we'll see the same asshole come out. Maybe he'll get tired of ruling and just go back to whoring and drinking 24/7.
Yeah.
We'll see.
I don't want to even think about what's going to happen in the future, because I think that from my part, I mean, because I think that what we're seeing now is absolutely, I still have to call it a retcon on the writer's part, but it was very obviously a retcon because we had to feel bad about what happened at the end of this episode. Obviously, anybody with like half a brain would feel bad about what happened at the end of this episode, period. We'll get into that in a bit, but it makes it a little more poignant when you see like, oh, Aegon actually seems to like his son and like want him around. And oh yeah, he's the future king, but he's also, granted, he's like letting his son fuck around with Tywin Lannister. And he's like clearly not ever going to discipline this child. And it's just going to turn into another baby gone, or well, probably just going to turn into another baby gone. But then we get the scene in the throne room where he really does seem to want, he's like, oh yeah, this guy's sheep are gone, give him back a sheep. Oh no, I can't. But then when the smith comes forward, iron is really expensive, we want to help the war effort, but we can't do this unless we're paid ahead of time. And Otto tries to like step forward and baby gone is like, fuck you. Which, yep. I don't know. Ugh, I hate so much that I'm actually like saying anything positive about Aegon. Oh my God, I hate it so much. I hate it so much. Make it stop.
I wonder if fatherhood is playing a role in what has chilled him out a little bit.
Nah, he had kids. He had these kids. He had these kids.
Yeah.
But now they're getting old enough to like be able to talk and stuff.
Oh, so now
I'm not a parent. I don't know how it works.
He became the father of a retcon is what happened here. Right? Just like, that's it.
Oh my God. Okay. Hot take number 6.
All right. So for our next hot take, we have a lovely reunion here between Rhaenyra and the fam. She comes into the small council room. Everybody looks like they're ready for a whole meeting. She's just like, go kill Aemon, and then walks out, hearkening back, I believe, probably to what we were talking about earlier with Daemon wanting her to get to it and be a queen. But she's like, nah, I'm tired. So then Jacaerys comes in and he's trying to debrief her and give her the update. But as they look at each other, they just continue to break down, and it just totally breaks down into this sobbing embrace.
Oh man, I don't know. It's like she's so angry, and then her other son, which also like the timing was weird. It was like, how did he get back so fast? Like, what was the what was the timing on this? I feel like we need like a 6 months later. Does he have a fucking Peter Baelish's TARDIS? Like,
well, as we saw in season 7, when Daenerys flew all the way from Dragonstone to rescue the boys across the wall, these dragons be fast. Apparently, I don't know.
That's true. I forget that dragons are like a thing again. Maybe he has like the sprinting dragon.
Yeah, maybe.
But
maybe the winds were blowing southward.
He's picking up that jet stream.
Yeah. Maybe Westeros actually rotates north and south. Exactly. He was flying with the rotation back home. Bastard. You can tell when he walks in, he doesn't really know how to approach her because he's all, you know, your grace and not mother. He's trying to fill that role of, I guess, one of her lieutenants. But
I really think that you're right. He was trying to fill a role, but he didn't need to fill that role, and she didn't need him to fill that role. What both of them needed was comfort, which I think says so much, because we wouldn't see that from Allison and her children. There is definitely like a connection and a love between Rhaenyra and her children that I think is like not necessarily unprecedented in Westeros, but for sure in this story we don't see so much.
Yeah, so this is one of those things to me, like I watched this and it's like a very human moment, because anytime you see anything that is like a human moment, it's always coming from a place of like anger. It's always like, oh yeah, no, I'm gonna lose control. And when they lose control, how do they always lose control? Oh, I'm gonna go burn something down, or I'm gonna go fight these people, or I'm gonna do this. Because, you know, we saw that with, not with the anger part, but with Viserys, right? Because Viserys was very human, and I think that's what made him so likable. likable and so lovable. And we now see that with Rhaenyra now, because she walks in there. Her kid is, you know, guts on, is trying to do his best to just fulfill his duty, do his duty things. He starts breaking down. She starts breaking down. So it was nice to see a very human moment in a very serious situation be something that was outside of just anger or vengeance, to where it was like grieving people. I thought it was great. And this was probably one of the most human things I think I've seen on the show. And again, there wasn't a lot that had to go into it. They didn't have to talk about it. You know what I'm saying? And that's what I've always loved about these writers and these screenwriters for the show, man, is that they don't hold your hand through this shit. They make it just very fucking real. So yeah, I loved the scene. I thought it was fantastic. It made me want to tear up. I mean, it was great.
It was a very small moment that said a lot.
But that's what they do so great on this show, right? Is they always introduce these little things, and it's just this little quick thing, and it has so much weight to it.
Okay. Hot take number 7. This is a deep one. The hot take is Crimes Cloak Damon is back. I just have to say that when I was watching this, I was like, Crimes Cloak Damon, yes! And then almost immediately, as soon as he like finished his little like shtick, I was like, Crimes Cloak Damon, no.
No.
Don't do this. But he did. But also, I was very, very much wondering if we would ever see Crimes Cloak Damon again. I don't know that we will after this. So I feel like this was like a, oh, we get a Crimes Cloak Damon. Cool. But also, ugh, and all the waves, because I think that he, so in Fire and Blood, it's basically like, yeah, Damon hired, I don't know if he actually like outright says this, but it's like very much implied that Damon hired Blood and Cheese to specifically kill one of Baby Gon's kids. That doesn't really make any sense, because Baby Gon had nothing to do with what happened to Luke, right? That was all Aemon. I liked that they made it a little more of a gray area where Damon went in there and was like, kill Aemon. And then they were like, well, what if we can't find Aemon? And he was like, I don't know. I don't want to say I feel like he didn't mean for them to kill one of Helena's kids. But to me, it felt like, oh, well, what if we can't find Aemon? Well, he didn't actively state anything else. He just said a son for a son. So I think he literally just meant kill whoever you can kill, which is dirty. And I don't like that. But if you guys have a differing opinion on this, please let me know, because I also don't want to have this opinion. I just do, because I don't think Damon is like, he looks real bad here. Let's be real. But I did like that they made it out to be that Damon specifically asked Blood and Cheese to kill Aemon, not as it's kind of written in the book that, oh yeah, well, obviously Damon sent these. Obviously Damon, we don't even know that Damon sent these guys, by the way. Oh yeah, obviously it was Damon, and obviously he sent these guys to kill one of Aegon's kids. And it's like, why? Why would he do that? None of this makes sense. So the way the show portrayed it made more sense. These two guys are clearly fucking idiots. Clearly fucking idiots. Oh my God. I don't know. Like, Crimes Cloak Damon, yay. Everything else that happened after that, nay.
Yeah, that scene was strange, because it just seemed like they kind of gave up pretty quickly. I mean, they had the perfect guys, right? Because it's just like, hey, we're just trapping the mice. There's mice everywhere. They could literally roam rats.
No, we have to be very specific that it's rats, only because Helena has constantly been like, oh, there's like,
exactly,
like the rats.
Mm. Okay, so they had like the perfect disguise to just go anywhere in the castle. If you're chasing a mark, I mean, and it's easy, because, you know, this guy is completely unmistakable. He's got a scar, he's got silver hair, he's got a patch. Very, very easy here, you know? And it just seems like they got up to the top and was like, hey, you know what? I'm tired. It's past my bedtime. So let's just go ahead and just murder this child instead. And I don't know if I got like a weird vibe, right? When the girl was pointing at the baby and he's like, do the other one, because it was lying. And the guy looked at that girl for a while and then was like, no, he's telling the truth. Was there something to that? Yeah, Helena. It's because it's a simple name that I can't remember it. My brain won't allow me to mispronounce it because it's a because it's a very simple name. I don't know if there was something to that or whatever, but it was kind of weird.
Yeah, it was overall kind of a strange scene. I agree. I thought when Damon handed dude the sack of money, that dude was going to go hire a couple more dudes to come help them. Because as they're going into the castle, I'm like, two dudes against Aemon? That clearly is not going to work. Aemon is considered to be one of the best sword masters in the realm. And also, I was like, what's up with the dog? Why is the dog here? Why are we kicking the dog?
The dog proves they're rat catchers, but yes, why kick the dog?
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, and then send it scurrying. Yeah, it didn't seem like a very thought-through plan to me. And as an Unsullied, you know, I haven't read the books or anything, but I do hang out on the interwebs talking about this world with various fans. And I knew that there was something called Blood and Cheese. So my question is this that?
It
was
just
killing one baby. Okay. In my head, I was expecting not something Red Wedding level, but certainly bigger than just one kid. But I mean, I guess it was an important kid, so...
So, wow, I didn't realize that there was like a level of how many kids you wanted to see killed.
I don't really like kids, so I'm like, it was just one kid and it was annoying anyway, so why do we care? But
so
we're so sorry you were disappointed on the level of child murder.
I was. You know? I needed more.
Yeah, I know, clearly. There's eight more episodes to go. Well, let's see what happens, right?
I will say this too, though. It's not just about the one child that was killed. It's about the fact that they made Helaena choose.
That's true. Poor Helaena. You never really know what kind of level she's operating on. And so it's interesting to see the choices that the actress makes. How does someone on Helena's wavelength deal with a situation like this? It was really cool to see all that play out on her face. I always love her little mini prophecies. You know, at the beginning, she's like, I'm not scared of dragons. I'm scared of the rats. That just instantly in one episode.
The episode was, it was a lot of build up to this one thing that is obviously very like awful. And then also poor Helaena just takes her other kid and like runs, just bursts into her mom's room. And Allison is like just topping fucking Sir Cole. Alice Law is happening like in real time.
Straight people must be stopped.
I don't fucking disagree.
Yeah, we have to watch this during Pride Month. What's going on? But yeah, I mean, I that's another thing where I'm talking about. It's interesting seeing Helena's reaction to things. I feel like any other mother in this world, we would have seen beating, bashing, clawing, anything to save this one child that's getting its head sawn off. But she's like, no, I'm just going to take this other one and run away.
Well,
she's
smart.
It's not like she can stop them.
Yeah, exactly. But, and so she at least gets out and saves her other kid. But repercussions, I mean, I'm sure. Oh my God. All right. I don't want to end this on such a dark note. So let's go into our favorites roundup.
Don't pick babies getting killed, Patrick.
He was annoying. So it's my new favorite.
We already talked about a little bit about the fact that dragons refuse to cross the wall into the north. And all I wanted to say, and I feel like I need to make this into a meme, is like, remember when dragons refused to cross the wall into the north? Craig and Stark remembers. And yes, this is like a Family Guy Pepperidge Farm remembers joke. Because I was like, wait, didn't Daenerys's dragon just... Like, we don't care.
Went right over it. Yeah.
Don't care. Yeah. Anyway, also, I wanted to say that Missaria is back. And this isn't like a favorite overall necessarily, but Missaria comes back and Damon's all like big mad that she was helping Otto with Baby Gone, blah, blah, blah. But it was interesting to me that Eric was defending Missaria. And to Damon, of all people, you'd think that Eric would be, I don't know, more hesitant about essentially like disagreeing with Damon, especially, but he's not. He like really pushes the issue. I really liked that scene. Not because I necessarily think Missaria needs to be defended, but I thought that that was a really interesting conversation where Damon like has this thing with Missaria. He walks out of the room. He's like, put her her in the cells. She's a traitor to the crown. And Eric is like, yeah, but, and Damon's like, oh, well, you and your brother, blah, blah, blah. And Eric is like, yeah, but I think it was just a very, I don't know that I necessarily understood why they put that conversation in this episode yet. I think I will very soon, most likely, but I liked it.
Thought seems it like was Damon a... wants to blame everybody for what happened.
Yes.
I think for some of this episode, it kind of threw me off my guard because it was like baby gone being semi-decent and then baby getting murdered, you know, when it should have been Aegon, you know, like that was kind of weird. So I would probably say like my favorite things on it really had to do anything with like Rhaenyra, the way she came back after she had found the cloak and everything. And then obviously when she's on the beach, right? Like that aspect of it, because to me, that's where the story is at for me, right? Because that is literally the matchstick for the actual keg. So it's like, okay, this is what's going to light all of Westeros on fire. The actual buildup with the way they did it, I think that's probably my favorite. I mean, I don't have a least favorite, but I'm just going to say the least favorite anyway is the cockiness of Aegon, because now he's like extra more cocky because it's like, oh, well, I killed this queen's kid now.
Aemond.
I'm sorry, Aemond. So yeah, he had the surprise Pokemon face when he killed this kid. And now all of a sudden he's like, oh, well, I'm somewhat of a badass myself, you know? And it's like, like, come on, dude. I know they say that he's a great swords person or whatever, but I haven't seen that shit yet, so I don't believe it. I didn't read the books. I don't know anything about it. So I'm like, look, I don't believe that shit. I want to see it. To me, he's still kind of full of shit. But again, I guess it could be part of one of my favorite things because it's pissing me off, you know? So it's like good writing. But yeah, anything with Rhaenyra in it for me was what did it.
Yeah, I agree. Rhaenyra was my favorite part of the episode through and through. I honestly thought that this season was going to start with her just going off and burning everything and everybody. But I was surprised. I love that she's really just taking a moment here to grieve her son before she can even think about planning a war. And yeah, her return was my favorite part. I always love seeing the map room, the big table, and how it's just beautifully lit up. And so yeah, her reunion with her family and especially with Jacaerys, very, very touching, very emotional. I love her. Can't wait to see what she does next. Yep. Hopefully it's fucked some shit up.
our queen. I did see what they were doing with this episode, trying to make Baby Gone and Alicent look quote unquote better than they did in season one. But then there's that whole scene where it starts, I believe, with Aemond. Yeah, it's Aemond and Sir Cole of House Law. And they're just like having a chitty chat. And Aemond is like, Her Grace, his mother. He's literally talking about his mother, Alicent. And he calls her by her name at some point. But yeah. Her Grace speaks with two tongues. And House Slaw over here saying she has a gentle heart while Rhaenyra is an evil spider. And then Aemond is just like, whatever. My mom loves our enemies, so she's a fool. It was a very interesting conversation between the two of them. Why? I'm legitimately asking that. Why was this in this episode? And I'm not expecting an answer. It's a rhetorical question because Aemond saying his mother speaks with two tongues when he's literally been in a small council meeting where she's been cautioning, oh, let's not just jump into this. And then Aemond ends the conversation by saying that she has love for the enemy. I think there's something there. I don't know what it is yet. But I thought that was when I say it's a favorites roundup, I liked the scene. I thought it was really well written between Aemond and Kristen because it showed like Aemond's like disdain almost for his own mother and Kristen just being like, but Alicent is amazing and Rhaenyra is the worst, and it's like, no, actually y'all are the worst, stop.
Right. Yeah we definitely have a lot of interesting setup with this episode. I suspect what's going to come next is Damon trying to smack Rhaenyra back into war mode, smack her back into her senses, so to speak. I don't know. I think that's what we're going to see next.
Yeah, I really feel like the pendulum swung in the opposite direction here. And the best I can say is that this was very much Team Green propaganda in like a lot of this stuff, you know?
Yes.
Yeah, because it was like, okay, so we kind of like retconned Baby Gone now, right? To where he's like, okay. And then you see Alicent kind of being in some things, she's being a real person. She's like,
he lights the candle for Luke.
Yeah, she like lights the candle for Luke. I'm like, okay, I know what's going, because let's face it, at the end of season one, all of us wanted blood. We were just like, no, sure. Team Green is going to burn and we're going to like just laugh at their burning carcasses. And now they're like, oh no, hold on a second. See, these people are actually people and they do normal people things. And then we have Damon hiring these people and they go and they kill a baby, right? It's hard to defend.
Even if that's not what he actually told them to
Even
do.
If it's not, exactly. If they would have went in there and killed Amon, okay, great. Okay, that's what we all want to see, blood there. But the fact that it's a baby now it's like, oh, wait a minute. We didn't, aside from Patrick, we didn't want to see that happen. Right. So it was like,
I mean, I would have preferred Amon.
Yeah, we all would have, absolutely, right? But then that would have made it too easy for us. So the fact that they're doing this, I really feel like it's turning into this like Team Green propaganda thing. No, see, they're just kind of normal people just like you. We just have different viewpoints. No.
That's the title of this episode, Team Green propaganda.
Right. Yeah. I don't know if it's that big of a leap for Allison, though. I mean, we remember in season one when Viserys died, she was sitting in the small council room and everybody else was like, okay, so we're going to kill Rhaenyra and this is how we're going to do it, and blah, 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 blah. Yeah. She's like, well, hold on. No, we don't need to do that. We don't actually need to kill Rhaenyra.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think Aemon's right. She does harbor some love for the enemy.
Oh, for sure she does.
Of course. Of course.
I don't know.
It's probably some sapphic love. That's why she's always jealous.
Yeah, that's
and why she's hooking up with Rhaenyra's ex.
Maybe now she has less to be jealous of, but that's cooling her off a little bit. I don't know.
All right. Any last thoughts?
It was great. Great having you guys and doing this all over again.
We have not rated a single thing on a scale of
one. Oh, no.
We never do, though. We have this rating thing that we never use.
Well, let's rate the episode, then.
Okay. On a scale of 1 to 10 Targ eyebrows, Patrick, you want to go first?
I don't know. This is honestly the first House of the Dragon episode that I just wasn't too terribly over the moon for, I guess. Just because it was, I don't know, maybe I'm a junkie for the action. And I really wanted to see Rhaenyra come in swinging, you know? So maybe, can we do half an eyebrow?
Oh, okay. Yes, absolutely. They have never properly filled in their eyebrows, so I have an eyebrow. Always.
There you go. Six and a half eyebrows.
Okay. What about you, Manny?
I am going to give this one, I'll say 7.5, because it wasn't, I don't want to give it a low score. Mm-hmm. You know what? No, I changed my mind. I'll give it an 8. And I'll give it an 8 for this one reason, is that I see what they're doing and they're doing this buildup. And I'm a huge fan of like the slow burn, right?
Sure.
I like it when things kind of, I like the foreplay. And I feel like that's what this episode was. The other half of this episode, aside from the Team Green propaganda, was really just like foreplay. It was just kind of like building it up to like, okay, this is what's going to happen. So I certainly appreciated Rhaenyra getting to go and get some kind of closure with like Luke and understand, okay, well, this is what's going on. Now I'm ready to like act. So if the second episode does more buildup, then I'll probably give it a lower score at this point. Cause I'm like, look, you did the buildup at this point. We all know where this is going. Let's go.
Yeah, let's
like,
get
I'm,
to I, it.
Exactly. I'm expecting, you know, episode 2 to literally just be everyone pointing guns at each other or dragons at each other and just, you know, shooting fire right at this point, because which it's just ready to.
It's like that Spider-Man meme, but they're all sitting on their dragons.
Yeah. Right.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. For me, it was the buildup. I knew what they were doing. And when I walked into the episode, I kind of anticipated that. Knowing these writers, I'm kind of understanding the method to their madness, to where I'm like, okay, I know what they're going to do. They're going to bring us in slowly is what it's going to do. Because everyone wants a resolution to what happened. And if they do that in episode 1, then people will be like, okay, well, I got my closure. Maybe I'm not going to be interested in the rest of it. So
you rated a 7?
What did I say? Did I say a 7?
I think you landed on 8.
Patrick gave it a 6.5. I'll give it a 7. Don't get me wrong. I like the episode. I do think it was very slow.
Mm-hmm.
Basically up until the last like 15 minutes. I do like that they introduced Alan of Hull. I like that they gave us a little more clarification on like the blood and cheese storyline. I'll be honest, like Rhaenys's sick burns literally bumped this at least a point for me. I would have given it a 6, but I'm giving it a 7 just for Rhaenys.
Love her.
So,
love her.
I like the episode. I'm excited for next week As we close out the episode, I just want to give a shout out to our Heroes to Our Patron, Tommy of the TKOK Podcast Network. Thank you so much for supporting us. Thank you to Patrick.
Thank you.
And to our listeners for joining us for Hot D Takes. Manny and I will be back next week to cover season 2, episode 2, which apparently doesn't have a name yet. I was literally Googling it before we recorded this.
I looked everywhere.
They have not named it yet, which honestly both weirds me out and worries me, but it doesn't have a name yet. So I will say
maybe
that
it'd be too spoilery.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Albeit we will be doing our recording a little later than usual because I'll be out of town and we cannot record until Tuesday of next week. So it will come out a couple days later than normal. For the most current news and updates about this series, make sure to follow me at A Geek Saga on Facebook, Instagram, Threads, and or Twitter. But also please consider backing our Patreon at patreon.com/geeksaga_entertainment. You get early access to our podcast episodes once they're edited. And you also get like almost immediate access to the video recordings unedited of all of our nonsense.
And boy, is there nonsense.
Well, to be fair, like these episodes very rarely actually have as much nonsense as like our other.
It's true.
As our other podcast.
Oh man.
Well, yeah, that's a whole different story.
Thank you for listening to the Geek Saga podcast. If you like what you heard, please check out other Geek Saga entertainment endeavors, including the Sagas and Sass webcast and podcast, and Ice and Fire Con.